Welcome to the Tell Us Something podcast. I'm Mark Moss, your host. Tell Us Something, inspired by the Moth, seeks to celebrate the craft of live storytelling. The Missoula community comes together for a night of shared stories, told live, focused on a theme. Tell Us Something is a quarterly event. Everyone has a story. What's yours? This quarter's Tell Us Something was recorded on December 15th, 2011, at the Missoula Art Museum. Features six storytellers telling a story based upon the theme Dear Diary, which ties into the art exhibit that was a fictionalized account of the lost journals of Sacagawea by artists Deborah Meikar-Erling and Peter Rutledge Koch. This week's story comes from Nate Beal and is titled An Exploration into Memory Encoding. Thank you for listening.
So when I read this story to myself the first time today, it was 18 minutes, so we'll see how we go. Oh, the time's running. So when I was a senior in high school, my mom was going through my car, and she found my diary. And it wasn't really a diary. It was a day planner that I had repurposed as a diary. And when you think about the difference between the two, it's kind of interesting. A day planner is something that a responsible senior in high school would put things about the future in, things about like college application deadlines, SAT, stuff I knew nothing about. And I had totally perverted the thing and instead put the stuff from the past that I was doing instead of getting my shit together in it. And so then it was a diary. And as a parent now, I know that there were things in there that were probably really hard for her to read. Things like, you know, memorable moments from keggers that past summer, embarrassingly accurate chronological descriptions of encounters with my current girlfriend, and probably what was hardest to read was an hour-to-hour description of an incident that had happened earlier that year that had resulted in a lot of time in a courtroom for me, and but more importantly, the loss of a young man's life. I had a group of friends. We were, as Mark said, we were risk takers. It's been a thing for a while, and we generally pushed our luck. We weren't like thugs or badasses or anything, but we were thrill seekers. You know, we kind of pushed our luck for that. And a couple of friends and I were on our way to Great Falls, Montana to push our luck. We had one thing in mind. We were going to get fucked up. We were going to meet new girls. We were going to push our luck in general, you know? And the first night, it was like a 3-day thing. The first night there was a complete disaster. It was a total flop. There were no chicks. There was no booze. We ended up in sleeping bags on somebody's floor, like sleepover style, watching The Exorcist in Faces of Death. And it was just totally okay. And so the next morning comes around, and the next morning is really hazy for me. And human memory is kind of this fragile and fickle thing. And the way I understand it is there's three ways that it can go awry. It can go awry physically, like when you're encoding the memory, when you're writing it to your brain. It can go awry in the storage mechanism, like if you hit your head, somehow it's stored, or in the retrieval. Now, I'm getting a little older. You might say that it's hazy because of the storage thing, but I think it's the encoding thing, because the first thing we did that morning was mix a bottle of Everclear with a can of frozen grape juice and split that amongst a handful of high schoolers. And so the next few hours are kind of like a movie montage in my head. There's loud music. There's girls. The girls are pretty. All the things about the night before are remedied. You know, there's booze and there's women, and I'm scared of the women. And so I drink more, and I don't really want to take my shirt off at the beach. So I drink more, and I come to in this snap, and I'm sitting in the backseat of a car on the driveway next to another car, and one of the prettiest girls is like sliding her short shorts in the backseat next to me, and I'm recoiling in fear. I have no idea what to say. And she says, "I am not going anywhere with that drunk motherfucker. He is going to kill somebody." And she points to the car next to me. And this is the point where I really wish that my internal diary had some sort of, that I could just go back and read it, because there's really important information that's missing here. Because I can't tell you why I didn't get out of the car. I can't tell you why I didn't go and pull my friends out of the car next to me. But moments like that, moments to do the right thing, they go by kind of fast. And I'd miss my opportunity. And we're driving. And the sun is shining. We're back to this montage moment. And the music is loud. And there's a girl sitting next to me. And somebody passes somebody else. And then the gauntlet is thrown, and somebody passes somebody else again. And here's where that thrill-seeking and that risk-taking and that pushing-the-limits thing starts. And before too long, we're on the downslope of a hill side by side in a two-lane road, and nobody's giving an inch, and everybody's going at top speed, and nobody's going to let anybody else around. And we're really pushing our luck, and our luck broke at that point. And the cars come into contact with each other, and the car I'm in starts into this slow sort of 90-mile-an-hour sideways drift. And out the back window, I can watch that other truck, and I watch it disappear into this tornado of just dirt and debris, like something off TV. And I heard on the news later, I have no idea how they knew this, but I heard on the news later that week that that truck rolled 14 times. And the first thing I see when I get out of the truck is this kid walking towards me, and he's got identical slashes in his forearms, and there's this blood, coming out of, and it's black blood. And I grew up in rural Montana, and rural Montana is kind of a do-it-yourself biology lab. So we taught ourselves how mammals work with 22 long rifles and folding buck knives, and I had cut open hundreds of beings by this point in my life. And I knew that when I saw blood like that, blood that was that color, that we were in real trouble. And the next thing I see is my friend Ed, who was in the back of the truck next to us. And he is just planted in the dirt. He's covered in dirt. I can't even see the color of his clothes. It's just dirt. He looks like a mummy. And before I could think about what was happening, he sits up, and I can see clumps of dirt coming off of his eyelids and this big black hole where his mouth should be, and he's sucking air. But he was alive, so I moved on. And the next thing I see is the truck that was coming next to us. And the truck has come to rest upright after it rolled all those times, and the driver's missing, and it's just chaos. People are looking for the driver, and I somehow get convinced that the driver is underneath the truck. And I remember being on my belly and scraping at it like a dog after a varmint some way. And there's a girl in the truck, and she can't get herself out because the door has been mashed on because it was, you know, it was rolled. And you hear these things about feats of strength and adrenaline. And this has only happened this one time to me in my life, but I folded the window frame down with one hand and then stuck my foot on and ripped that door. I just remember a big crunch and pulling the girl out and then trying to tip over this truck by myself to try and find a person underneath. And I don't know who found him. For years, I've been telling myself that I found him. And when I started trying to get in touch with the story to tell it to you people, I can't piece that together. My diary doesn't have that. So I don't know who found him. But the driver of the truck was laying on his back in the tall weeds, and it seemed like he was hundreds of feet away on the far side of the wreckage. Not like he'd been deposited there on the way, like my friend Ed had, who my friend Ed lived, by the way, but like he'd been thrown beyond where the truck came to rest a long ways. And he was laying on his back, and his skull was not shaped right, and there was blood coming out of his nose. And the diary in my mind is never, ever, ever going to forget what it sounded like when he was fighting to breathe, ever. And I remember a couple hours later in the hospital, somebody saying that after he came out of surgery, they were going to put him on life support. And I knew that second that he was never going to wake up, that was a complete waste of time, that he was never going to wake up because his eyes were half open when we found him, and there was just no life in him. All that breathing was involuntary, and he didn't wake up. And so to make a long story shorter, because this is a long story, the next real clear memory in my mental diary is being next to my friend Ed's hospital bed, and his internal diary is completely malfunctioning. He would wake up, and he'd shake his head, and he'd open his eyes, and he'd look at me, and he'd say, "Nate Beal, where are we?" And I would say, "Hey, we're in a hospital. I had to tell him what town we were in. We weren't at home, you know. We're in Great Falls. We got in a car crash. Somebody might die." And he would react to this in the way that anybody would in waking up to this news. It was complete shock, you know. He would, and he'd close his eyes, and then 90 seconds later, it would happen again. His internal diary was not working. He'd shake his head, and he'd look at me, and he'd say, "Where are we?" And I did this with him for the rest of the day. Relive that day in 2-minute snippets for the rest of the day, until finally the hospital staff told me that I'm not family and I had to go. And I realized at that moment that I didn't have anywhere to go. I was the only member of the party who came to town who wasn't in police custody or hospitalized. I didn't have a car. I didn't even have any shoes. And I was 18. By that time, I was 18 years old. The police never called my parents. The hospital didn't have to call my parents. And I'll tell you what, I sure as hell wasn't calling my parents at that point to tell them what was going on. And so I actually didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell them when I finally made it. There's a whole lot of events that happened. But when I finally made it home 24 hours later, I peeled off the hospital slippers that I've been wearing for the last day and a half and threw them in the garbage, walked into my house barefoot, and I got some shoes, and I left. And my parents, I eventually did get the guts to tell them what happened. I think they found out some other way and asked me about it. And then they found out a lot more details about that whole situation from courtroom testimony and police depositions and stuff like that. But I don't think they knew the extent of what happened until my mom found that diary in my car and read it. It was a day planner, though. All right. Thanks.
Thank you for your support of live storytelling and local art. Tell Us Something would like to thank The Bookstore at the University of Montana, a local bookstore serving the students, faculty, and staff of the University of Montana, as well as the Missoula community at large. More at montanabookstore.com. Fact and Fiction, where books, authors, ideas, and readers interact. More at factandfictionbooks.com. Missoula Art Museum, free expression, free admission. More at missoulaartmuseum.org. Deborah Magpie Earling for sharing her story and for the inspiration for this quarter's theme with her exhibit, The Lost Generals of Sacagawea, with photo interventions by Peter Rutledge Koch. Josh Quick, illustration and design. Josh Quick, who designed the posters for this event. More at quickjosh.com. Mirage Tees, screen printing, t-shirts, and more. Montana is for badasses. More at garagetees.net. Jess Millette for her help with timekeeping during the event. Nick Shantz, who helped restore the site when the servers crashed. The next Tell Us Something podcast is forthcoming on Tell Us Something Tuesday next week. Like us on Facebook, find us on Twitter, or at tellussomething.org. The next Tell Us Something event is scheduled for March 6th at the Top Hat. Everyone has a story. What's yours?